Welcome to Homeground. I'm Brian Kahn. The scientific method tends to break things down to quantifiable, replicable pieces, parts of the whole. As science has been applied through technology, this process has produced wondrous things, from knowledge of the parts of atoms to miracle drugs and genetically modified organisms. But what may get lost in that process is awareness of the whole and the connections and relationships essential to the whole. The Round Table on the Crown of the Continent is an annual conference which attempts to address the whole by connecting people, cultures, communities, and conservation. Leah Whitford is at the conference. She works for the Blackfeet Tribe's Planning and Development Department and is a member of the Montana Senate. Leah, many thanks for joining us on Home Ground.
Thank you.
Can you give us a little background? Where'd you grow up? What'd your folks do?
I grew up on the Blackfeet Reservation, born and raised there. My parents are Gerald Gardepi, and my mother is Shirley Weipert. My dad served in the Army, came home and began raising a family there. He served as an irrigator for the tribe for a number of years, and then moved to Alaska and worked up there for a time.
Did you go or did you stay?
No, I stayed. This was later on in my adult life that he moved up there. And so while he was there, he drove a taxi and just enjoyed living at Point Barrow, Alaska.
So in terms of your life, now you're born when and on the reservation, but when?
1966.
Okay, so you're growing up in the 60s and 70s. Where'd you go to school?
Went to school in Browning, at the Browning Public Schools.
Okay, help me understand. And throughout, I'm going to ask you questions reflecting my ignorance. My apologies, but there's nothing I can do about it. Are there on-reservation schools as a choice for Indian kids in the Blackfeet as well as off-reservation schools?
There are. The on-reservation are public schools. They're the ones that a lot of our children go to.
Okay.
For now, we have elementary schools. I think there are four of them. Then you have the middle school and the Browning High School. Hart Butte, which is on a reservation, located south of Browning, that also has a school for elementary through high school. Smaller population. So a lot of residents there have a tendency to go to school there. There are children that go off the reservation to boarding schools that are ran by the Bureau of Indian Affairs.
Let me see if I get this straight. There are public schools, as in normal Montana public schools, on the reservation that Indian kids go to and non-Indian kids who would live there. And then there are boarding schools run by the Bureau of Indian Affairs for Indian kids. And they might be on or off the reservation.
Correct.
So we're talking late 60s, 70s. How was your experience as an Indian child in public school?
I had a good experience there. I enjoyed it all the way through. I was happy to, you know, be going to school with my relatives, mm-hmm. people I knew all my life, and had a good connection with the public school teachers and all the workers that were there. I had a really good experience in our Browning Public Schools.
One of the things that we've had since then, adopted by the state of Montana, is Indian Education for All. Your classes, I assume, were all or predominantly Blackfeet. Is that fair?
Yes, that's correct.
Was there any serious education about your people's history at that time in the public schools that you attended?
Maybe not so much in the way of the elementary. When we got into high school, we had a language class, tribal government class.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much history like they do now, but we did have that later on in the secondary school level.
So would you say that the combination of what you learned in your community from your parents and friends just as part of being in the community and combined with your public school education, when you graduated from high school, you had a pretty good sense of Blackfeet history, the story of your people, or would you say not?
Not as much as I would like to have had. It wasn't much later on that I learned a lot more. And it was because I took up the initiative to do that.
Hmm.
Because I was going to be teaching in Browning Public School. And so I decided that, you know, this is time for me to become more knowledgeable about my tribal history.
How did you do it?
I went out and asked people. I would ask elders. I would ask tribal lawyers to explain, you know, treaties. I would ask individuals, landowners, and people all around me, all kinds of things about the Blackfeet culture, language, the history, our traditions. And whatever I learned, I shared with my students when I was teaching at Browning Public Schools or at Blackfeet Community College.
Well, if you became a teacher, you went on to college at some form. Could you summarize that for us?
I graduated from MSU Northern in Havre with a teaching degree in physical education, a minor in history. And then I went on to get my master's degree at MSU Bozeman in adult higher ed. And I went back to BCC, Blackfeet Community College, and received an AA degree in Blackfeet Studies.
All right, let me ask you this. There's Leah Whitford coming out of high school with what you indicated, what I'm going to call is not an in-depth knowledge of your culture and your cultural history. And Leah Whitford now after your personal outreach to elders in your community, et cetera, and your formal education. What's the difference in what you know about your history of your people?
I learned that our people, our Blackfeet people, are survivors. They have been here for millenniums, if you will. They have lived off this land. They were able to continue their traditional cultural and language, their ways, by the values that we cherish, which is family, which is connection to place, and all things that are around us. Those are the things that I think are real important as a Native person to understand about our own histories. We've been here a long time. Our elders, our ancestors have taught us these things, and it is up to us as individuals to connect to that knowledge. In one way or some form, we need to be responsible for ourselves in our own journey of learning, and that is especially true as a Native person, to know those types of things and to ask.
You're listening to Home Ground, and I'm Brian Kahn. We're talking with Leah Whitford. She works for the Blackfeet Tribes Planning and Development Department and is a member of the Montana Senate. You use the word survivors. Your tribe, nation, and many others went through what I will call a Holocaust 150, 140, 130 years ago, which in terms of the time of your people is not a long time ago, given the time you've been here. How do you see that period, that 130 years? And I know that's a big question, but taking it just, I'm going to frame it this way, and if I'm framing it wrong, you'll tell me. You have this disaster. You now have a dominant culture supervising whatever you want to call it in some respect over your sovereignty. There's got to be profound upheavals. How do you see that in summary, where it's led today for your tribe on that land?
Blackfoot people have adapted to all kinds of changes that have come forward for us, whether it was the loss of the bison, buffalo on the prairie, to diseases that decimated our tribes, to warfare and difficulties, cultural clashes among groups that are here on the plains. We've overcome boarding schools, taking of our children and putting them, separating them from their families. We've survived all of that. We've maintained our identity, and we will continue to do that as Native people. I think that is the strength that our ancestors instilled in us, is to just keep moving forward. Sometimes you have to smile through it, but you need to get through it, whatever that difficulty may be, because there's a lot of wonderful good things that life has to offer, And our Blackfoot people celebrate that through our ceremonies. Life.
Let's talk just a second about the boarding school issue, because I have just recently learned about it. Can you tell us what it means? Boarding school for me is a ritzy place that my parents might send me to, or some other friend who's got a little extra resources, and it's a high-class separate education where you don't live at home. I'm gathering there's more to this than that.
Yeah, there is more to it. The mission schools that started up first were the ones that our people were forced to go to. You had tribal people living all over. There weren't clusters here and there like we do now in townships. And so the missionaries would set up a school, and they would ask the tribal people to come and bring their kids there. And eventually they requested that the government insist that families bring their children there. It wasn't just a voluntary type of thing.
So then let me just see if I get this right. Your kids, if you're a mom or dad, are forced to go to a school away from your home. And it's a missionary school in this case, so it implies a Christian teaching of your child, whether you want it or not, and obviously not Blackfeet traditions, etc. Fair?
Fair.
And the purpose of that was what, from the point of view of the proponents?
To assimilate a group of people, if you will, to a different culture, to a different standard. Those families oftentimes didn't see their kids for years, not just weeks or days, but years. And, you know, for some, they were orphans. The children were. They didn't have a family, so they were there as well. But there were families that, you know, their kids were brought there and were left there.
So let me just get the chronology straight here. It started with mission schools about when? We're talking 19th century?
Right.
Till about when?
Early 1900s.
And then they were replaced by these boarding schools run by the BIA.
Correct.
Now, did those boarding schools run by the BIA, did they and do they still maintain this sort of assimilationist policy, or has that transitioned over time?
That has transitioned over time. For now, what they do is they embrace more of the culture of the students that are there. And some of the boarding schools have, you know, a mix of different tribal backgrounds, people from different tribes that attend. And so they try to recognize now the value of what each tribe has to bring. So they incorporate a lot more of the different cultural values for the tribes.
So as you're growing up, are you around folks who had this experience?
Yes, I was. My parents and a number of my relatives were in boarding schools.
All right. And what would you summarize the consequence of that experience as being?
A disconnect to their cultural ways, to their language, to learning the traditions, our native traditions, and the disconnect to place. To this landscape, it's difficult to be in an area that, you know, you're unfamiliar with, and then to come out of the boarding school or to come out of that that time period and to reconnect to your own people.
You've been educated in a whole different set of cultural values.
Exactly.
Obviously, I'm an outsider. I think there's a general sense, backed up by newspaper stories and friends in different tribal communities, who tell me that what I'll call the human situation, the community standard in many reservations is very, very difficult. High levels of alcoholism and drug abuse, unemployment, domestic violence. So there was a series of articles about the Fort Peck tribe, I believe, juvenile suicides. Stuff that we generally associate with high concentrated inner city poverty. In your view, is this cultural disconnect a factor in that, or how do you see that phenomenon? And am I right about the phenomenon? Let's start with that.
Yeah, I believe you are right. there is a disconnect, and I believe that has a lot to do with a personal identity and struggles of trying to figure out how they fit, where they fit, and how to move forward sometimes. And I see, you know, people get stuck. They just kind of keep doing the same thing and have a difficult time moving forward, maybe because they don't see a way out or a different way. And I've also witnessed youth on a number of levels that went through cultural training, have looked at themselves as a Native person and really defined their cultural values for themselves, mm-hmm. and just were able to rise above all that, even though their background may keep a lot of people back. There were these individuals that decided they were going to change that, and they learned more about themselves as a Native person, and that just helped them be able to overcome things and look at things differently.
How about you? What worked for you?
Family and relationships that I've built. My family were encouraging, you know, encouraging me to go on and do things. If I decided that I wanted to get a master's degree, my family encouraged it, even though they didn't have that pathway for themselves. Mm-hmm. They wanted me to have that pathway, and so they encouraged it. My parents did. My relatives, my aunties, my cousins were willing to give me those good words of encouragement and a push forward. The other thing is the want or the need, the drive to have a better life, or be able to make a difference, and not just for myself and certainly for my family, but more broadly, you know, my relations, far-reaching, and my community, my reservation community, my tribalness, to just be able to reach beyond the boundaries of what we usually see within ourselves as our boundary.
Where did that come from for you, that broader vision?
Some of it from my parents, but listening to some of the elders and what they were saying, just encouraging always to, you know, take care of one another. And take care of one another means taking care of your environment too. So it encompasses all things, people and place and animals and birds, water, whatever. It just take care of one another, take care of things, take care of yourself, but mainly just contribute to life in a positive way.
You're listening to Home Ground, and I'm Brian Kahn. We're talking with Leah Whitford, member of the Blackfeet Nation and of the Montana State Senate. That brings us right to the subject of this conference, and again, it's a round table on the crown of the continent. Underneath it says, as a sort of the mission statement, connecting people to sustain and enhance culture, community, and conservation. And I'll add, as part of a whole. Now, it's fairly easy to write words on a piece of paper, and sometimes a little tougher to do. What's your sense for this conference, but more importantly, more broadly, efforts to do that, to be aware of the whole, to act on the whole in ways that make a difference rather than just talk? What's your experience?
When you look at the participants of the conference, you're going to see people from all different backgrounds. You have people here from various agencies. You have landowners. You have tribal government people. You have, you know, government officials. You have students, some foreign students and some local students. And so I see, you know, this connection among the people that are participating in the conference. They have a focus, and their focus is really sustaining the crown of the continent, which is running up and down right through our state, north and south. And we have, you know, people that are just driven to make sure that this place exists in the future for future generations to enjoy and participate in.
Now, I saw something that said it's about 18 million acres, which is roughly 8 or 9 times the size of Yellowstone. It runs up and down the Front Range, right, into Canada, correct? Mm-hmm. Comes out in the plains. Now, somebody might say, oh, it'll be here. It isn't going to go anywhere. So you got to be talking about, when you say be here, more than just physical existence, because it will physically be here. What are you talking about?
Talking about the very essence of when you walk into the forest area, into the mountain area, there's very few footprints there of human activity. You're seeing nature in its very natural form. And that is what I mean by being here. That part of nature needs to continue to exist. Our footprint shouldn't have to be everywhere. If we're there, we should turn around and look and see that we didn't leave evidence that we were there. We need to make sure that people that see it for the first time are seeing it in its very raw and natural state.
All right. Now, someone might argue that there's a direct tension or conflict between that view of a predominantly natural landscape and an economically successful landscape utilizing quote-unquote natural resources to provide jobs for people. By contrast, let's use it as a contrast, the Crow Nation is aggressively interested in developing its coal resources and coal mines and pristine landscapes, whatever else you want to say about coal. They aren't the same approach to land. In looking over the conference planning team, there are a lot of NGOs, government organizations. The only economic entity that I see is the Geotourism Council. So, what's your sense for that? How do you preserve a predominantly natural landscape and provide, let's just say, the Blackfeet people with economic viability so they have a reasonable standard of living, quote, unquote? You're a legislator, you're in the real world. What do you say?
One of the things that I think is real evident here is the ability for people to come together and work together, whether it's agencies, landowners, or tribal governments or any other type of government agency or official, I guess, coming together and saying, all right, what do we need to do in order for us to live here and to also protect that area or a place from being overutilized to the point that the landscape is not going to be productive? So how do we come together and do that? Well, you first have to come to the table. And I think that's what the Roundtable on the Crown of the Continent has done. It has brought together a lot of different people, a lot of different backgrounds, official and unofficial, and said, how can we sit down and have this dialogue about going forward and sustaining what we have now? We might not be able to regenerate things from what it was in the past, but we definitely can work toward keeping it so that it is there for the future. As far as the economy and the economic value of what's going on here, we have to remember that the state of Montana receives a lot of dollars for tourism. And what are people attracted to? The nature and the naturalness of what they see in the state of Montana. And there are a whole lot of people out there that have worked very hard to make sure that this landscape, Big Sky Country, stays Big Sky Country.
Listening to that, when you're talking private landowners, I know there's grazing up on the reservation, tribal lands. I think there's some bison coming in, but you certainly have a long history of cattle and livestock grazing. And then you have tourism. I'm hearing you say sort of those are culturally acceptable, place-based acceptable uses of the land. Fair?
Fair.
Okay. Yep. The alternative is, let's say, the Crow concept. I know there's natural gas and oil up on the Front Range. What's your sense for the appropriateness of development of those kind of resources, which tend to be very place intensive, bringing in a diverse kind of folks who aren't there for the long term, a boom and bust, but the boom is pretty good economy. That fit or not fit with your definition?
Well, I think for the Front, we have to remember that, there's people there that would prefer that there be a buffer zone, and that buffer zone being an area where, you're going to have production, But there may be places that don't necessarily or shouldn't be developed because they have a different value and meaning. For example, the Badger 2 medicine, the Blackfeet tribe holds reserved rights in that area.
That's and federal land?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
They hold treaty rights in that area, and the Blackfeet tribe has come forward and said that they don't want to see any development in that area and that they need to be consulted based upon those agreements and treaty rights that they have. So there are people, and not just the tribal people, when they had testimony about the lease, there were people from all over along the front, as well as other Montanans throughout the states that came and said they value the pristineness of what they see stepping out their back door and looking at the mountain front. And so that needs to be important to people that are making decisions that shouldn't be ignored. Yeah, there needs to be development. We live in a world that is driven by many different things that are technology-based. But we need to find a balance. We need to figure out how we can do things like the development of natural gas and coal and oil and these types of things. How do we do it so it's not invasive and overstepping? We need to look at alternative methods as well, which are important for us. And I think that's part of our job as legislators and as citizens of whatever state we're at, that we need to be mindful of all these things and just being able to talk to people and dialogue about it. It's important for the future of our people. And that's what brings us back to this conference and what we're trying to accomplish here is bringing people to the table to talk about issues, to talk about concerns, to talk about what research is going on and how that can support different ideas or maybe policies, or just being able to have those individuals, all the stakeholders, you know, be able to come together and have a dialogue, and hopefully we move forward in a good positive way that the majority of the people will agree with.
Senator Leo Whitford, I very much regret to say we're out of time. I want to thank you so much for being with us on Home Ground. And to our listeners, many thanks for being with us. We hope you'll join us next week. Home Ground is an independent production of Artemis Common Ground and does not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station. Post-production by Valtron Recording Studios. We welcome your ideas for new programs at www.homegroundradio.org. Home Ground is made possible by grants from the Liz Claiborne Art Ortenberg Foundation, Cinnabar Foundation, Humanities Montana, and the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication about issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans.